Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.
Well, Kenny, we've just watched a pretty entertaining game in the end between Newcastle and Tottenham. A point gain for Newcastle and a pretty damaging 2 points loss potentially for Tottenham. And is that a performance that sort of sums up Tottenham's season, that Harry Kane delivers but somebody else always lets them down?
Yeah, probably they've given ammunition to their detractors who'd say, well, you know, flaky, not a flaky Tottenham performance. Traditionally, that's been thrown at them over the years.
Are they flaky?
Well, they were today, because that game was really there for the taking. I mean, they didn't have to be at their best to win that game, but what they had to be was, like, concentrated, like, defensively organised, solid. You know, not too many individual errors, just a real kind of professional performance with the attacking qualities which they have, Kane in particular, high up the pitch, and they would have won that game. But that wasn't the case. Played some good football during the course of 90 minutes. Kane was a threat. But too many loose passes, you know, sloppy passes, decisions, kind of a weak mindset at times. Loose defensively, some poor individual defending. Kind of always ensured that Newcastle were still in this game. You know, they gave Newcastle an excuse to really keep believing. They've just kept pushing. If they stayed on their coattails, even though they were a goal behind for the majority, obviously, of that second half, that there was still something there for them. And you felt the Newcastle players believed that right up until they got that equalising goal.
Strange in a way, because Tottenham, one of the main criticisms is that they're quite dull at times and very defensive. Yet, I don't think Newcastle have created as many chances in any other game all season. So, was it just that the players that Mourinho picked were poor, or were they a bit more open than they usually would be?
No, I think individuals have to hold their hands up. Davinson Sanchez, he's, you know, feast or famine in terms of what you get from him. When he's at his best, he's hugely impressive, very athletic, kind of quick over the ground, aggressive defender, attacks things, keeps things simple, not kind of a ball-playing centre-half. That's when he's at his best, and that's when he plays in the team. But when he's not at his best, when he's having one of those looser moments, those games, then he's a real liability to the team, and that was the case today. Had an awful first half, to be honest with you. And it kind of spreads a little bit of unease around the team, particularly across the defensive line. You know, he contributed towards the first Newcastle goal. Horrendous clearance, which Newcastle took advantage of. But his general all-round performance just wasn't good enough in the centre, that Tottenham defence. And it was really Joe Roden, the more inexperienced centre-half, who really kept that defensive unit together today. Even Reguilón at left-back. A lot of talk about Spurs have to keep him. Would they be lucky enough to keep this player? Caught the eye at times going forward. But look, to me, from the defensive side of his game, it was a little bit of an effort at times. Ugh, do I really have to defend? That type of attitude. Didn't take the same amount of pride in his defending as he did when he was in the opposition half the pitch. Jacob Murphy just ran past him a couple of times. First half and second half, the key moment of the second half, Matt Ritchie crossed into the back post area up against Joe Linton. Just little or no effort there, really, to make life uncomfortable for Joe Linton. Just allowed him to head that ball back into across the six-yard box, which eventually led to the Willock equalising goal. So too many of those things scattered all around the pitch. Lo Celso could point out for me, midfield, not good enough. Just not good enough. In possession, sloppy, out of possession. So surprised he stayed on the pitch for as long as he could, particularly when you see the likes of Sissoko on the bench. Not as gifted as Lo Celso in terms of his football ability, but a real kind of physical presence there. You know, kind of legs up and down the pitch, physicality, tackles. You know, surprised he stayed on the bench for the whole of the game. So I might even suggest Mourinho looks at his team selection today in terms of the team that he put on the pitch to begin with, but also the calibre of substitutions that he made and when he made them. Gareth Bale coming on late onto the pitch. Now, he comes on 5 minutes ago after the equaliser. Now, why leave it that late? Get him on 15, 20 minutes to go. Make him go and score the third goal, which takes the game away from Newcastle, rather than panicking and getting him on the pitch with 5 minutes to go, hoping that he's going to produce a bit of magic and he's going to win you the game at that point.
So where are Tottenham then? They've missed out on the chance to go fourth. You can sort of break their season into thirds. The first third, they had some disappointing results, but put together a run that we thought maybe they were going to be title contenders. The middle third, a complete collapse in form, but they've managed to go on a run over the last few weeks that's got them back into contention for the top four. When you look at them there, like, is Mourinho getting the most out of that side? Is that about where they should be?
Well, he has done that for periods of the season. You're absolutely right, but there was a massive drop off that middle third part of the season. It's just literally just the wheels came off and ended up in elimination from the Europa League. That really hurt them as well. Shown some form of, I'd suggest, the last kind of week, 6 weeks, Bale's really lifted up his game. and they've put themselves in with a fighting chance for that Champions League. Look, it's the 2 points they've lost today. It doesn't mean Champions League qualification has ended today. You know, they're still more than capable of pushing the likes of Chelsea and Liverpool, it looks as if, for that remaining fourth position. But it doesn't help. Performance like that really don't help. And I actually think the deficiencies in the team, which were there probably at the start of the season, are probably still there. And I think are the areas where he needs to rectify going forward. I think they've got some great attacking talent sprinkled across the pitch. Presence of Kane, Son in particular. We know that. Lamella, I think, has probably had his best season for Tottenham. Moura's has qualities there. We know that. Lo Celso wouldn't be a huge fan of. Ndombele is an interesting character for me. Not exactly sure the position he's playing at the moment. And as an orthodox central midfield player, as a six, I'd like to see him more as a 10, 15 yards higher up the pitch. But the problems for me are defensively for Spurs, which they have to get sorted. Rodon's come in and looks as if potentially going forward, he might be the answer. But they need to get a partnership that they can really trust at centre-half. Kind of a rock-solid central defensive partnership. I don't think they've had it. It's tried a lot of players there this season. Alderweireld, you know, isn't getting any better. He's only heading in one direction. Dyer seems to have lost the confidence of his manager. Sanchez is never going to change for me. You can't trust him. So he needs to find a centre-half for me, potentially to play alongside Joe Rodon at centre-half. Issues even at a full-back. If Reguilón goes back to Real Madrid, Ben Davis over the course of a season. So they're the issues for me defensively. Goalkeeper as well, I'm going to throw him as well. In terms of Lloris, I'm not a huge fan of him. For me, they can actually do better. They need to do better. Even me, I saw him linked with Manchester United a couple of weeks ago. Lloris, Manchester United putting money on the table for Lloris. Woof, snapped their hand off. Get him out the door, get money for him, and go and throw a little bit more money on top and get like a top-class goalkeeper as well.
Lots of problems at the back then. They'll be hoping they don't have a problem up front as well come the summer, because Harry Kane almost got them through this again. 2 goals. He's now top scorer in the Premier League once again this season. He's moved on to 8th in the all-time list, 162 goals. It's the question that's going to be asked week in, week out now. What should he do? It's not totally in his hands.
No, it's not.
But he hasn't won anything with Tottenham. Maybe that changes in a couple of weeks' time in that League Cup final. But it feels as though he's at the peak of his powers right now. Do you stay and get your statue outside that new stadium? Or do you go and try and win trophies somewhere?
Yeah, well, I can understand it if he was getting a little bit itchy in terms of maybe experiencing a different environment and at a club that maybe is competing for the very biggest of honours. I'm talking about a league title here, really, in England. So I could understand that. I don't think it'll be his decision, I've got to be honest with you. And I think if he wants to get out this summer, he's going to have to fight himself out. He's going to have to get down and dirty with Daniel Levy to get out of the football club. You know how difficult that's going to be. He's obviously tied to a contract there. And it certainly wouldn't be in Spurs' best interest to let their top goal scorer leave the football club. So that's a very difficult scenario for me. I think if Spurs don't qualify for the Champions League, Nathan, again, that Kane may be thinking then, really, do I want to turn up pre-season for Tottenham next year? You know, with no Champions League football and a team really, realistically, which isn't going to challenge for the Premiership as well. Like you say, he's in the prime of his career as well.
And you look at that all-time list, so he's within 100 goals of Alan Shearer, all-time Premier League scorer. Maybe he gets there, but you probably played against most of those players who are above him, whether it's Shearer or Thierry Henry. Where does he rank for you? Just how good is Harry Kane?
But I don't think he has to change club to get there, to top of Alan Shearer. And I actually think there's an argument for saying, if that's purely what's driving Harry Kane, by the time I finish my career in the Premiership, I want to be the leading Premiership goal scorer of all time. If that's what's really driving him above everything else, competing for Champions League titles, etc., then for me, there's a stronger argument for staying at Tottenham
Hotspur.
Because
you're guaranteed to be first choice
Absolutely.
For the next 6-7 years.
You're guaranteeing Tottenham are going to be in the Premiership for the next 6 to 7 years. You're guaranteeing you're absolutely the main man there and you're going to play every game. Not only are you going to play every game, you're going to play almost every single minute of every game, which has been the case with Harry Kane. So I think that's an interesting thing which people maybe don't speak about too much. But I think that's a factor as well.
He's at the level, I presume, though. He could play for any side.
He is. Yeah, without a doubt. You could put him in.
Does he improve Manchester City?
I think he does. Well, now if you're going to play with a false number 9, he probably doesn't. But I think it is, absolutely, with the qualities that he has. Could he play with those players in terms of the the level of the type of football that Manchester City play? Yes, absolutely. I think he could. Could he go into that Manchester United team as an orthodox number nine? Yeah, absolutely. I think that's an easy thing to say, and it's an easy answer. But I think it's a more of a complex question, and there's a lot of things at play there simmering underneath in terms of where a potential move can happen in the summer. At the moment, for me, I feel as if it's not going to happen. There's too much there. There's too many plates spinning for me to see that thing come to fruition in the summer. But certainly, if the Spurs don't qualify for Champions League football, yeah, certainly that might make him think a little bit. But I really feel as if with Kane, and it's not a criticism of Kane, I really feel as if those personal accolades in terms of what you've just said, all-time Premiership goal scorer, all-time England goal scorer, I think those two are massive drivers, maybe more than people say. People say, oh yeah, personal accolades are all very well and good, but it's all about trophies at the end of the day. Yeah, of course you want the trophies as well. But with Kane more so than any other player centre-forward for me, Nathan, of the last 20 years, I think that is a massive driver, those personal accolades. And like I said, if you look at it purely within that prism of top international English international goal scorer and Premiership goal scorer in 6 years' time, for me, the argument becomes stronger. Stick where you are. Stay where you are. Because his level drops at Tottenham, Nathan. His level has dropped at times over the time he's been there. He hasn't been 9 out of 10 every game for Tottenham over the past 6 years. You know, coming back from injury, it's taken him time to get back to his level, 4, 5, 6 games, and he's played. He's played. There's never been a cry, oh, Kane's got to come out of the team. His overperformance isn't good enough. It's not even discussed at Tottenham. But I tell you what, it would be a point, a topic of discussion at Manchester United or Manchester City or Liverpool or these top clubs. And he might find himself on the touchline a little longer than he would expect. So that's the fascinating thing around him.
Maybe he does end up as the Premier League's all-time scorer. Did you get an accolade? Did you get a trophy for that record of most games in the Premier League without ever...
Richard, so predictable. Is this where this whole Harry Kane conversation has been leading? Kenny Cunningham's consecutive games without a goal.
It's an incredible record. You have the most appearances in the Premier League without ever scoring a goal of anybody.
I'm beginning to take a bit more pride. It used to be a little bit of embarrassment. I'm actually taking more times you bring it up, the more personal pride I'm actually taking from it.
That just underlines how many games you played in the Premier League, Kenny, which is the most important thing. So there's a compliment
backhanded
in there somewhere.
Compliment, yeah, barely.
I really wasn't expecting much from Newcastle coming here today. They've 2 wins in 18. Steve Bruce is getting hammered from all sides. The supporters want rid. That was the best I've seen Newcastle play in a long, long time. What's changed?
Yeah, showed a bit of spirit today. Shape looked decent. 3 centre-half wing-backs, Jacob Murphy really impressed in that kind of right wing-back role. Kind of front players, Joe Linton, bit of a nuisance. Kind of fair play to him. We know what his goal return is, his ratio. But he puts a shift in. He keeps running the channels, physically putting himself around, trying to get into the right areas. And he got his reward in that first half. Big mistake from Sanchez. We know that. I think it was Longstaff who played the ball over them. Wasn't it tapping, Nathan, was it? You know, considering picked somebody lacking in confidence, had to finish and make the right connection with the inside of his right foot, and did. And obviously made a contribution as well in terms of the equalising goal. Almiron was nice and busy up there as well, wasn't he, from the very start, you know, up and down the pitch. And played with real kind of energy, a bit of conviction, Newcastle, which hasn't always been the case this season. And stayed in the game. I think Spurs helped him, like I said. Spurs didn't put into the type of performance any time today that you thought this game's over. You know, opposition players, sometimes you're 2-1 down, Nathan, and you're hoping to get back into the game, but you're thinking, we've no chance here. They're keeping the ball away from us. I can't even see us creating a chance. But you sense Newcastle always felt, look, if we can get the ball in advanced area, put crosses into the box. Spurs are having one of those days. There's something here for us. And they kept pushing. They kept believing. The manager made a couple of substitutions. Got Willock onto the pitch. Saint-Maximin, which is a pretty obvious one. But they played their part. Saint-Maximin played a lovely little, dropped the shoulder a couple of times and played the ball out to Matt Ritchie for the equalising goal. Great cross into the box. And Willock, of course, the last substitution, making the biggest impact of all. So, yeah, great credit to the players and the manager. They'll take a huge amount of heart from that point today.
And as we mentioned in commentary, Willock probably the only Arsenal player who made a positive impact all weekend. When you look back over the weekend, Arsenal's performance last night and just how poor they were yet again against Liverpool. In commentary, Gary Neville was making the point that this will have really settled in Mikel Arteta's minds which players stay, which players go, and the sort of transformation that needs to happen at Arsenal in the summer. Is that giving Arteta a bit of a free pass for last night's performance?
Yeah, well, I think the manager always has to take a bit of responsibility in terms of the performance of the team. I take Gary Neville's point. If he didn't already, should know it already. I don't think that performance last night showed up in terms of some new inadequacies that we didn't know about. We know about, like, at centre-half. They still haven't resolved the issue at centre-half. Still haven't got spoke about Spurs at centre-half, having a rock-solid centre-half partnership. Arsenal is exactly the same. Gabriel again last night. Still haven't made me mind about him even prior to last night's game. But he gave a performance last night that you thought, oh, I can't trust him. You know, you can't trust him. You've got Holding alongside him in Chambers, decent enough. Come in and give you a shift. But again, defensively across their back line, not good enough. Have to improve. That central midfield position, Partey's come in, absolutely. Yeah, good enough. Yeah, I think you can build a team around him. But who's going to play alongside him? Ceballos, absolutely not. No chance. Hasn't got the physicality, like the mobility, athleticism, you know, presence in there. No way. Xhaka, I don't think so. Not good enough. So again, you're searching. A bit like Spurs. Two centre-halves, another central midfielder play alongside Partey. But all I will say is when you do look up the pitch, and I wouldn't factor in last night too much, because the players who weren't available last night, young Bukayo Saka,
yeah.
Rowe Smith, Martinelli coming in, potentially Willock coming back to the team as well, Nketiah, Reece Nelson, these type of players, even Pepe, to be fair to me, indicators this season maybe there's something to come from him. So they've got a wealth of talent for me, and young talent.
There's not a big if over all that talent?
I don't think so. No, not for me. Saka, Rowe Smith, from what I'm saying, absolutely not. Martinelli, I know he's coming back from a serious injury, absolutely not. You could argue Willock, potentially, is he good enough to come in and stay in that team? Possibly not. As a squad player, yes, I think so. Pepe still has something to prove. But I think there's real quality high up that pitch for Arsenal. So that's the plus point. But until they resolve their deficiencies at their end of the pitch, it's going to be a struggle for them. It's as simple as that. If you're carrying players in the centre of defence and centre midfield, I mean, how can you... You can't push for a Premiership title. That's just a fact. And even like Champions League positions, the strength of the teams up there at the moment, where Arsenal have to go from where they are to get into that top four, there's no chance they can make that jump at the moment with the players that they have, even playing at their best or close to their best. The gap's too big.
Just to finish up, it feels like it's been the longest week in the history of Irish football, from Serbia through to Luxembourg and Qatar. Everyone has had their say. I know you took the easy money from the national broadcaster over the last week, so we've missed out on your input here on Off the Ball. Some people feel Stephen Kenny should go, that like there's better options out there, that a change needs to be made. John Giles feels, and he was, I think, putting a Kyle in, that this is the least talented group of Irish players he's ever seen since he started in Irish football all the way back in 1959. What's the Kenny Cunningham take?
Oh, well, on what question?
On all of it. Where do Ireland go from here? Where does Stephen Kenny go from here?
Well, it depends what you mean by the question, to be honest. I don't think he goes anywhere. He turns up and he prepares the team just as he has done for every previous game. He's got his contract to the end of the qualifying campaign, so don't quite understand the noise around the team at the moment, the talk of like that he should be changed.
Did you expect more from these three games?
I was hoping for more, yeah, as I'm sure the manager was, and actually the players. I mean, that's pretty evident, you know. So, and I think it's pretty evident that we have to do better. We have to play better collectively as a team. But again, the manager knows that and the players know that. So I don't think there's any no reason to argue over those. Everybody's in agreement on that. I just feel as if the manager's got a contract to the end of the qualifying campaign. And generally speaking, whether it's Stephen Kenny or previous Irish managers, I always feel as if the end of the campaign is an obvious time to take stock and reflect in terms of how the position that the squad's at, how they performed in the previous qualifying campaign, and then arrive at a point where you're making a judgment call in terms of the team and the manager and that connection going forward. So that kind of conversation for me has to be parked till November, till we play the last game. Can't make a judgment call off the back of the Luxembourg game. It was a poor performance, but we're capable of better, and we'll have to produce better. So give the manager the opportunity to prove that he can organise this team into a kind of cohesive unit in possession and out of possession, and hopefully those improvements will come. And I think they'll probably have to come. I'm not here suggesting that regardless of what happens between now and the end of the qualifying campaign, Stephen Kenny has to be given another contract. I'm not one of these people suggesting he's got to be given a 6-8 year contract regardless of performances between now and the end of the group campaign. I think that they will be a factor, and they should be a factor in terms of making that decision. But I think there's more to come from the squad.
You're not as worried then as John Giles about the quality of the squad?
No, I don't concern myself with that. All I concern myself about is the manager getting the best out of the squad. That can only be the conversation. I'm never concerned about the makeup, the qualities of the squad, you know, where they're playing their football, how many game time they're getting. The only thing you can judge a manager on is he getting the best out of the squad available to him. That's the only thing. Not if he qualifies for European Championships, not if he qualifies for a World Cup. Are you getting the best out of the team? Yes, if you are, there's another contract, regardless of whether he would qualify for a major competition.
Well, what on these three games? Did he?
No, he hasn't got... Well, that's pretty obvious. Like, you know, the performance was poor against Luxembourg. That's acknowledged. So he hasn't been getting the best out of the team. So we have to get more. So that's why I'm always a little bit more optimistic. Because I'm looking at the performance against Luxembourg thinking, that's the best we've got. Yeah, I'm flat as a pancake. Yeah, my chin's on the floor. But I'm a little bit more optimistic because I know there's more to come from that group. And I'll be interested to see tactically how Stephen changes it going forward. Those little combinations of players, what he's learned from these three games. Because he will have learned. And hopefully if he has, and he makes those little modifications to the team, even in terms of how we played, that first half against Qatar for me was encouraging. Because I saw some conscious decisions from players in possession in terms of getting the ball from back to front a little bit earlier. And for me, there was clearly conversations had between the manager, coach and staff and players. Look, let's get that ball from back to front a little bit quicker. And I thought we did that. Shane Long was spilling the channels, looking to get in behind. We got into the opposition half more touches in the opposition half, more sustained pressure on the opposition team. We didn't see that enough. Certainly against Luxembourg and actually not against Serbia either, particularly in the first half. So that was better. So I saw a manager and a group of players actually acknowledge, look, we need to modify things slightly in terms of going forward. I thought they made those adjustments in the first half against Qatar and we looked a better team from an attacking point of view because of it. So that gives me a little bit of encouragement. But we have to maintain that and keep improving on that as this qualifying campaign goes on.
Great stuff as always, Kenny.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as hoofing it up to Johnny Walters.